Welcome, everyone, to another edition of SCRC's Let's Talk Caregiving podcast. I'm your host, Roberto Velasquez, Executive Director of SCRC, and I'm here, as always, with my co-host, Marta Rañón, Director of Public Relations and Government Affairs.
Hi, Roberto.
Today, we have a very special guest, Dr. Daniel Sewell. Dr. Sewell is the Associate Vice Chair for Geriatric Psychiatry and Development and a Professor of Clinical Psychiatry at UC San Diego. He is a board certified in adult psychiatry and geriatric psychiatry and is a past president of the American Association for Geriatric Psychiatry. And one of my favorite all-time speakers, Dr. Sewell, welcome.
Well, thank you, Roberto. That was a very kind introduction, and thank you for inviting me to be with you all today.
Yes. So today, we're really thrilled that you're here because we want to talk about a topic that is often taboo, but always talked about, but maybe behind doors, and which is intimacy and the challenges of being a caregiver for someone with dementia or Alzheimer's disease or that type of disorder. And the reason we bring this up is because it comes up quite a bit from our family caregivers. And we know that this is a topic of great concern for everybody who's a caregiver.
I'm so glad that we're talking about this today, and welcome, Dr. Sewell. Always
Thank
a pleasure
you.
to have you participate in our programs. And I'm so glad we're talking about this because I hear this topic a lot from our caregivers. And not that they want to talk about it, but they want to talk about it. It's just there's so much out there and there's so much confusion and taboo surrounding this topic. And so I'm really hoping that we can maybe clear up some of the questions that caregivers might have.
Well, I am so glad that you have decided on this topic for today, because as you've shared, it's a really important topic, and yet it really is probably the most unaddressed concern that we bump into in our day-to-day work with caregivers. So talking about it is a good first step.
That's
and
right.
I sometimes speak about this in the community, and when I do, my goal primarily is just to help everyone overcome their hesitation, because I think this is one of those moments where it takes a village. And I think that the more each of us becomes comfortable being able to discuss this topic, the better it will be. So that if you are a caregiver who's struggling with concerns about intimacy, you'll have options and you'll know who you can comfortably talk to and work out what your concerns are. We know very much that there's no one right answer for everyone, but I think our goal, whether we're professionals or whether we're just neighbors or family members, is to provide a context in which this can be safely and openly discussed so that the person concerned can come to the decision that's right for him or her.
And that this is a normal part of the development and the thinking, that it's okay to have these thoughts and even to have these questions about mom or dad or whoever it is that you're caring for.
Right. You know, sometimes it's helpful to kind of contextualize interest in intimacy or libido, interest in sexual experiences. And we sometimes talk about the fact that humans have appetites. We have appetite for food, for instance. And our appetite for food doesn't just automatically go away as we age or as we become ill with a medical condition. But what we see in both groups, older adults and medically ill adults, is we see a lot of misconceptions and biases coming into play that really changes the landscape of the situation. So for instance, there are these false beliefs, and we see them impacting both the older adult and the ill adult, which is, for instance, that it's dangerous for an older adult to have sex, or it's dangerous for someone who's ill to have sex.
I've heard that from our caregivers.
Let me just say, pretty categorically, that's false, with just a few exceptions that we could speak of. But generally speaking, there are very few illnesses that really make engaging in intimacy contraindicated due to danger in terms of your health. So that's a myth. It's a myth that older people do not have intimacy. And yet that's a very strong myth in our culture. And so those myths or those biases are one of the reasons that I think this conversation doesn't take place as often as it should. I think there are other reasons as well.
Well, and you know what? We all, as human beings, have a need for that physical, emotional connectedness. And intimacy comes in so many different forms. I mean, it could be just being comfortable, just sharing your thoughts. It could be just comfortable holding hands together. It doesn't always have to be sexual in content, but it's intimacy.
That's right.
And sometimes that is what's lost as a caregiver.
Yes.
Because that closeness, that partner, that person who you could talk about anything with, hopefully, is no longer fully there.
Right.
All the time. So intimacy is, it takes a lot of different forms.
It does take a lot of different forms. And these forms are actually interconnected too, as a matter of fact. And that's what's been borne out in the research that's been done. Historically, we've always talked about how emotional intimacy is really a critical thing for older women or women in general who want to go and also have a physically intimate experience. Interestingly, some of the more recent research shows that both men and women put a premium on emotional intimacy as an ingredient to having comfortable physical or sexual intimacy. But Roberto, you are absolutely right. There are many different forms of intimacy. I think the one that we struggle most to talk about is sexual intimacy.
Right.
I don't want to steal your thunder, but for a person caregiving for someone living with cognitive illness, it's a very unique challenge compared to caregivers helping others with different types of illnesses other than one affecting the brain.
And I would like to talk about that because I know a lot of our caregivers often deal with caring for someone who has memory loss or dementia or cognitive decline, and therefore this topic, how do you broach it?
Right. Well, the big challenge for those who are living with dementia is the toll that the dementia illness takes on the individual's ability to think, reason, and remember. Because for most of us to have physical intimacy, we're going to begin with wanting to have a sense of safety
mm-hmm.
and the ability to communicate well with that other person. That act of communication helps create the right atmosphere, the right moment for something more than just emotional or intellectual intimacy to be taking place. But dementia undermines that.
Mm-hmm.
And the big issue with dementia is the problem that we call aphasia, which is just the $10 term for talking about how dementia illnesses can impact the person's ability to use language, particularly spoken language.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've reached a stage of your dementia where it's no longer easy for you to share your thoughts, ideas, and concerns, or to understand those thoughts, ideas, and concerns when expressed by another, then it really undermines the whole ability to hang on to intimacy between the two people.
So what can a caregiver do then in that situation?
Well, that's a great question. And let me just put something else out there to contextualize our conversation. What we know from good scientific research is that the priority that we put on intimacy when we're young, particularly physical or sexual intimacy, is really maintained throughout the life cycle.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So if you never really felt that that was such a critical part of your day-to-day life when you're young, you're not going to experience it as critical later on in life. The rating that you assessed in terms of priority in youth is sustained. The opposite is true. If it's always been a really essential part of your quality of life, then you're going to see that priority maintained throughout the course of one's life. So when we're working with an older couple and one of them has dementia, we have to start by getting a sense of, well, what was usual
mm-hmm.
for the two of you?
Right.
And then we expect that some couples can hang on to that kind of usual way of connecting with each other.
That must be very challenging, though, because being a caregiver, I mean, you are the core of everything. You're the housekeeper. You're the nurse. You're the
medical assistant.
Medical assistant. You're running errands.
The chauffeur.
The chauffeur. Yes.
You're dressing, cleaning. I mean, and then as the disease progresses, like a disease like Alzheimer's, you're absolutely that person's lifeline.
Right.
You're exhausted.
Right.
So even if the individual who has the illness, their libido is sustained throughout and maybe has curtailed just a bit, the caregiver, though, is exhausted.
Yes.
Right. And that can be a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a couple thoughts about that, but certainly it's really important that we get the message out that whether you're the patient or the caregiver, if you're not in the right space to have a comfortable experience that's intimate, it should not happen. So if you're an exhausted caregiver, please hear this. You do not have to do something that feels inappropriate in terms of timing or circumstance. Mm-hmm. Now, I want to take this one step further because there are dementia illnesses that injure a part of the brain that change a person's personality and changes their judgment and changes maybe their interests. And so if your loved one is expressing behaviors and priorities that they've never expressed before, and if especially those things make you uncomfortable as a caregiver, mm-hmm. you do not have to participate. And I have seen this painfully presented to me in my day-to-day work, particularly with the oldest couples that I work with who grew up in an era that was so different than mm-hmm. our current era. And back then, we did socialize adults differently. And there were, I do still bump into women who were very carefully socialized to be very dutiful to their husband, mm-hmm. and to the point where I have heard stories of these very dutiful spouses putting themselves in harm's way when intimacy was in the air. And please do not do that. You do not have to put yourself in danger to fulfill your marital vows or your marital duty.
Thank you for saying that, Dr. Sewell. And I really hope that our listeners are listening to what you're saying, because Roberto, I know you have an experience with a similar situation of a caregiver who their relationship with their family members changed based on something similar.
Yes. Yeah, so, and I have several of these stories. I mean, over the years, I've been in the industry for over 30 years now, so you hear a lot of stories, and used to run some support groups. But that's definitely the case in this one scenario where there was a elderly woman who now had Alzheimer's, and it was pretty progressive in the stage. And she had a boyfriend, a companion, of over 40 years, and they decided a long time ago they were never going to get married. However, when she was not able to make decisions anymore, the oldest daughter, who was just maybe about 15 years younger than the mom's boyfriend and never approved of their relationship, stepped in and tried to remove him from the home, It was just a chaotic. She was imposing her own beliefs into the relationship that her mother had with her longtime 40-year-old boyfriend. And it was just sad to see, and luckily it was straightened out, but it was just a big challenge.
Well, that's a great vignette, Roberto. I'm so glad you shared that. And just for the record, according to our current thinking, if this situation had been reviewed by a panel of experts in this area, these experts would likely have said that the daughter should not interfere.
Right.
And there are two groups now that have published criteria to help guide all of us when we need to decide when it's safe and appropriate for someone with cognitive impairment to have intimacy. And it really rests upon a concept that exists both in the legal literature and the medical literature called capacity. Mm-hmm. And capacity is the ability to understand the situation and understand the risks, benefits, and alternatives to that situation, and to be able to speak those out loud so someone else can confirm your understanding.
So are you saying that these should probably be included in the conversations when it comes to healthcare directives and powers of attorney?
Exactly. We forget about that, but to me, it would be so excellent if we could get into a rhythm of every time we sit down with someone to create those types of documents mm-hmm. about medical decision-making, for instance, that we could include other important categories of decision-making at that time when the person still is able to express their priorities. And so that would include asking them down the road, if your cognitive illness progresses and you're not able to do certain things, how should we integrate your intimacy into mm-hmm. your life? And maybe even getting more specific about, would you like to continue to have intimacy with your husband or your boyfriend?
Well, you know, those are great conversations because
yes.
I know that's probably not the case for the majority of our older population that are dealing with these issues. But, you know, 80% of our caregivers now are under the age of 60. That's an amazing amount of caregivers. So the portion of the spouse caring for the spouse is becoming smaller. The younger caregivers, being the sandwich generation, the baby boomers, they're having to deal with this, maybe caring for their parents, but they may end up at some point caring for their spouses. Mm-hmm. And we see that over time where family met, where a caregiver becomes a caregiver again. They were caring for their spouse. I mean, a parent. Now they're caring for their spouse. Yeah. So having this information is very important for planning for future.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, I don't want to be too black and white about this, but one of the other concerns I have on a day-to-day basis in my clinical work is this tendency for caregivers in this very noble, compassionate way to give way too much of themselves to the job of caregiving. And it's a problem. I understand how it happens. It's so natural, if you love someone, to translate that love into actual action and to be there in the trenches helping them. But you have to be very careful for a couple of reasons. But the most important, of course, is that if you are a primary caregiver and your caregiving then injures you and you become ill and unable to be a caregiver, that's a big problem for the whole family system, including most of all the ill person in your family. So you never want to caregive so much that you take yourself out of the game.
Right.
Now, that's what we talk about all the time.
Yeah, self-care.
Self-care.
So here's a marker. If you have had a fairly enjoyable and regular experience of intimacy with your person that you're caregiving for, and now you've entered a zone where you're always just consistently too exhausted to engage in any form of intimacy, whether it's a conversation or maybe something that involves physical touch, that's a red flag that you've overextended as a caregiver. So you could just put that in your back pocket as something to kind of use as a gauge. Have I given too much? Do I need some more help as a caregiver?
You heard it from Dr. Sewell.
Right, absolutely. Well, you know, it's really interesting because, you know, what are some resources that families can access? What kind of help can they get when they're having these types of issues? And I know here at Southern Caregiver Resource Center, we have a really great counseling program. And it's not a marriage and family type of counseling, but it's a counseling. It's therapeutic. It's a cognitive behavioral based therapy. And it's really dealing with issues that you are now having related to caregiving. So intimacy, sexuality, all of those topics can come to the table. And we have it's just a great counseling program.
I agree. And I'm so glad that you guys provide that counseling. And for those of you who listen to this and may never have had an experience in counseling before, I really encourage you to give it a try. I think there's a lot of misconceptions and misunderstanding about what happens in a therapy session or a counseling session. And really, there should be no fear here. The people that do this work are compassionate, skillful people who really just want to be helpful.
Well, and I'll tell you what, another area, but sometimes this is not a good place to bring up these types of topics, are support groups, which are very good for learning, getting that emotional support, but depends on the group and the mixture of the group. And I know one of the main reasons there was a support group that was started years ago, a men's support group. One of the hottest topics on the men's support group was, is it okay for me to have a relationship with someone else when my wife cannot have a relationship with me because she's so severe with the disease of Alzheimer's?
Yes. That's an important question, and I'll just reiterate that there's no one right answer for everyone,
right,
Roberto. And I have seen the full spectrum of adaptations to that type of situation where I have seen spouses of both gender who, for them, the right thing to do was to not have any sexual experiences if it couldn't be within the context of their marriage, because that's just what their value system told them.
Right.
I have also worked with people who were very good people who had a different value system. And for them, particularly with early onset illness, the caregiver, as you've mentioned, can be quite young. And I'm not sure that if I were a 50 or 55 year old person and I was actively engaged as a caregiver that I would necessarily want to sign on to another the last 30, 40 years of my life being celibate.
Right.
So our goal, though, is not to make the decision for the person, but just to create that environment for them to work it through so that whatever they choose, it's a comfortable choice, and that piece of their journey doesn't become another part of the burden. For instance, if they made the wrong choice and felt guilty, now they've got the caregiving and the guilt for the wrong decision. So
right.
It really is important to talk it through ahead of time and feel good about however you decide to work it out.
Those are great words of wisdom. I mean,
it's so important.
Everybody should tune in and listen to this talk because, of course, Dr. Sewell, you're the expert in, for us, and we just love talking to you all types of topics, especially something so difficult to talk about as intimacy and dementia and those challenges.
Some people would say that intimacy becomes even more important as you engage in a journey of caregiving because you really need balance in your life more than ever because of the demands of caregiving.
Right.
It's a lot to handle, and that's why I'm so glad that you're making these points, and hopefully caregivers out there realize that they don't have to do it all and that they should be aware of what's out there so they are able to make the right choices for themselves.
Well, thank you both. That's all the time we have for this edition of Let's Talk Caregiving. I want to thank Martha again as my co-host for sharing her stories.
Pleasure to be here with all of you.
And Dr. Sewell, of course, thank you very much for joining us today. And I want to remind our audience that if you are providing support to a loved one, you don't have to do this alone. Asking for help is not a sign of weakness. It's a sign of strength. Just go to our website at scrc.care. or call us at 1-800-827-1008. Or follow us on Facebook. We have a Twitter account. Facebook, that's where we put all our podcasts. SCRC is a nonprofit organization. We provide our services due to the generosity of our donors and community partners. If you want to make a tax-deductible donation, please go to our website and click on the Donate tab. And remember, SCRC is here for you.
Caring for those who care for others.
Thank you.